Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. In this, what I could call a Christmas edition, we have Karen Williams in our virtual studio. We're literally 2 days away from Christmas. Karen, I wasn't sure if it was your idea or my idea, but it's great to have you in our virtual studio. We're so close to the end of the year to talk about a fascinating topic, to talk about books and authors and new ideas. So welcome. Thank you for making the time for this. And please tell our audience a bit about yourself.
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure whose idea it was, but I think it's perfect time to talk about books. It's always a perfect time to talk about books, isn't it? So I'm Karen Williams. I am the book mentor. I've been in business now for 16 years, but what I've done for the last 8-9 years coming up is I've supported business owners with their books. I've had a writing background and I've been writing my own books since 2009. And actually, I wrote a book before that, but not many people know about that. So I've written 9 of my own books and I love helping people to get their ideas out of their heads so they can become the thought leader that they know they are. And they can actually make a bigger difference in the world and they can impact people. And they can also grow their businesses off the back of the book, because that's ultimately what most people want. But they always come from that difference maker, that change making mentality. And that's what I love to do. So that's a really short introduction to who I am.
No, fantastic. Karen, you've touched on something that I think we've spoken about at length, and that is the concept of change makers and why so many people feel compelled to become change makers. Why do they feel so compelled to take their message out to the world? So maybe tell us a little bit about why is book authoring and the writing of books becoming not just so popular, but so meaningful of late?
Well, I think there's a few reasons why I think people write books. I wrote my first book in 2009, and it was before the birth of social media is like it is today in terms of, you know, so big. And it was actually back then, it was a very good way of getting your message out to more people. You know, I remember the first time I had someone in Australia, because I'm based in the UK, read my book, and it's like, wow, I've got to Australia. Now it's commonplace. But I think now more people are writing books, so celebrities, famous people, but actually, you know, normal mere mortals, you know, people like us, we can actually write as well, because it's a really great way of articulating our ideas. It's a really great way of making sense, making as well, sense making of what we've been through in terms of our story, our journey, our expertise, our knowledge, our wisdom. So I think many people do it because they want to build their thought leadership. But I think it's more than that. I think it's the sense making, it's the difference making, it's the fact that they can see how they can make what they do accessible to more people as well. Because if you think about it, if somebody wants to find out more about you, Sir, and they obviously could engage your services, but they could also pay, you know, pounds or, you know, dollars, etc., for a book, which is actually so much more accessible to more people. So I think there's many reasons. One is the thought leadership point of view, the business growth opportunity as well. But also, I think one thing we haven't really touched on yet anyway is the fact that publishing has become so much more accessible over the last 10 years. You know, when I wrote my first book, there weren't many options, but now you can self-publish, you can do audiobook only, which I did for one of mine. One of my books is digital only at the moment anyway. You've got Kindle, you've got ebooks, you've got so many different methods. And actually, in reality, you could just up, and I wouldn't recommend anyone does this, you could just upload a PDF to Amazon and you're a published author. And that's not the best way of going. It's not the thought leadership approach, but it has become so much easier. But for me, the thought leadership is really the key thing. It's the fact that we've got the ability these days to make a difference and to be a bit edgy and to be a little bit disruptive and to change the world.
You know, it struck me so much when I joined the Writing Hour, and I know they do these 1 hour kind of not joint writing, but kind of writing in the company of others for a 1 hour slot in different cities around the world, so different time zones. So even if you kind of miss the morning spot, you'll surely have an afternoon or a night spot, depending on what your time zone preferences are. And it really struck me in the first meeting I joined, there were over 200 authors. And it was just just visually, you know, being on Zoom and seeing 200 faces of individuals who are all writing their book, that's really kind of put in perspective. So it was quite an eye-opening moment.
Well, it also means there's a lot of competition. So I think these days, however you publish, whether you independent published or whether you get a traditional publisher, you have to make sure your book is good. Otherwise, it will get lost. I see a lot of authors out there do it badly. So for me, it's about helping people to do it in the best possible way, so they are a success, that people read their book, because success can mean obviously different things to different people. But ultimately, you want people to read it, digest it, and take action with it. But it's amazing how many people are doing it. It really is.
That's fantastic. Let me ask you, you know, when you see people expressing interest or wanting to write books from not just different geographies, from different cultures, what are the things that you find are common among them? And what do you think are some of the things that are unique to a particular geography or a particular culture in terms of how they see the act of book writing, how they approach it? Are there differences?
Not necessarily. I've worked with people in Australia, America, and all over Europe, obviously South Africa as well, and the UK, and not really seen much of a different approach in terms of everyone has the same challenges, not enough time, not enough hours in the day, struggle to get their ideas out of their head, to need a little bit of help with clarifying the message. But I've not seen huge differences with different cultures, to be fair. And some people I have an online program as well, which I don't actually deal directly with. And I know I've got people on the online program who are writing in different languages as well. So certainly, I think Swedish or Norwegian and Dutch as well. So I'm not sure what their experiences are, but certainly in the English speaking world, I'm finding that it's the same challenges, the same issues across the board, really.
The human condition.
Exactly.
I've also noticed that some of the people who are on your program, as I am, they are also, some of them are digital nomads. Some of them have, you know, changed locations. Some of them are writing not from their usual place of residence. So I guess the kind of the scene in which you write also makes a difference. How are you set up for that?
Yeah, so space is one of the things that I talk about quite a lot in terms of writing, because when we're writing at our desk, we're kind of conditioned to be doing the things we're doing at our desk. And actually, I run a writing retreat in Spain, and I like to go away. At the moment, I'm talking to a friend of mine to go away in March to do some writing, because that's how I write at my best, is to take myself away. And the nomadic lifestyle is kind of what I like to do as well. Not doing it so much at the moment, but it's on the longer term plan.
Oh, that's great. I'm interested to know, what is the first thing that you look for when people speak to you about their intent of writing a book? I know we've had some initial conversations, you know, before I kind of launched into the project. But what are the kind of things that you look for? What tells you that a person is, I guess, willing and able, and, you know, has a good chance of becoming an author? And what are the things that tell you, actually, it's not. It might be a kind of a flavor or something that they'll quickly grow out of.
It's a really good question, Sal. So there's a few things I would look for. First of all, I look for the idea. I look, what is the idea that brings everything together? And certainly, because all of my clients are writing a book that's linked to growing a business or thought leadership or speaking in some way, I also look at the link. So if they're, for example, they work with children, but they're writing a book for, I know, maybe people going into retirement, there's a mismatch there. So certainly for me, I always look at the book that's aligned to their business, and also a book that can be leveraged as well, you know, that can actually become an income stream and can lead to more business for them. So it's that idea, but it's also the idea that excites them, that lights them up, that sparks interest, that sparks ideas. So it's having that idea, or being willing to have that idea developed, because that's what I do with my clients, is I help them to really sort of clarify their idea and make it come alive so they enjoy it. I also look for commitment, because I look for someone who's willing to put the work in, because even though I can help people to write their books in around about 4 hours a week with a good plan, you've got to be committed. It's got to be a priority now. And some people might come back to me 6 months, a year, 2, 3 years later if it's not the right time now. But I want clients to achieve success, so they've got to have that commitment and be willing to carve out that time in their diary to make it happen. So there's two parts to it: the idea that's willing to be developed and linked to their business, but also that desire to write, that desire, and also the ability to write. When I take on clients, I don't necessarily know their ability at that stage, but the ability to write, or the ability to learn to find their voice as well.
100%. You know, one of the things that struck me at the beginning of the process was, how many people actually get involved in writing the book? You kind of think, okay, so you're the author, and therefore you're going to be spending the most time writing this, right? And that's certainly so far has been true. But there's so many other individuals who are contributing to the book, some knowingly and some unknowingly.
Absolutely.
Through conversations, you know, through mentoring, through kind of fortuitous, you know, meetings that take place. And before you know it, you have a long list of people who are actually part of the writing as much as you are. We help you to be flexible. We help you to find kind of the real topic that you're writing about, that will help you to change it. Topic of a chapter that will help you to look at different examples. You'll connect you with people you didn't even know existed. So for me, one of the things that certainly was surprising about writing a book was, in fact, how much of a team sport it actually is versus the kind of, I guess, somewhat traditional or even romantic concept of the writer kind of being cooped up in the attic, writing profusely and refusing to speak to anyone. That's been the furthest things from the truth, certainly in my experience of writing. And I just wonder, as you work with different authors, do you find something similar, or is everyone's style and propensity to involve others in this project, in fact, is different?
When you get to write your acknowledgements page, you'll find out how many people have influenced your books are. So I think that's something to be bearing in mind when you get to that stage, maybe, you know, spring, summer next year, 2023. Certainly, yeah, it's a team sport. And I think actually, if you do shut yourself away in the attic, that's the last thing you should do, because you need that depth from other people. You know, even as we've been doing this podcast, I've written down a couple of notes going, oh, that would make a great piece to write about. And that's a really great thing to talk about that I could expand on further, because that's what you do. You have a richness when you have a conversation with somebody that you can't get if you're shut away in an attic. So you need to have people around. You need people to support you, of course, when you're writing. So it might be friends, family, partner, who can give you that space and time to write. You've got, certainly the most important thing, talking to people about your book when you start writing it, which a lot of people shy away from. But you, as I said, you get that richness of talking and having conversations and finding out what people want to read from the book. And if you engage them and build your community as you're writing it, you'll have a ready-made audience who want to buy it when you launch it. So that's incredibly important. And then there's obviously the people, the wider people who support you, like maybe people in your team or people that you then later outsource some of the process to as well, or mentors and coaches and things along those lines. So the team is vast. And yeah, some people don't even know they're involved. It could be the fact that you've gone onto the internet to do some research and you've just found an article, a white paper or a book. So that person may not even know that they've inspired you, because you read something and it's triggered a thought in your head and going, actually, I need to do more research. So it's such a wide thing. And yeah, a lot of people do have that romantic notion of there'll be, you know, in a little cabin in the woods somewhere. But no, that's not the case. And it's also something that has to fit in around everything else, because very few people can actually escape and go to the attic or a cabin to write, can they? They have to fit in around day-to-day life. I don't know many people who have that luxury of being able to escape totally.
No, absolutely. You know, when I started writing, it really kind of dawned on me on how many of the ideas actually come up or spring to the surface as a result of these conversations. I had a list of about 10 to 12 different interviews of people I will interview in different parts of the world to talk about business ecosystems, networks, growing, new offerings, new products, new innovations. And as I started speaking to those individuals, two things happened very quickly. The first one is, they connected me with other individuals. So suddenly the network of 12 became the network of 120. Yeah. And 120 probably will end up somewhere, probably between 300 and 500 individuals, in fact, who I'm interacting with, interfacing, asking questions, interviewing formally or informally, people sharing content, et cetera, et cetera. That's the first thing that happened. And the second thing that happened for me is they helped me see connections that weren't that visible to me. You know, as authors and generally as professionals, we, as every other human being, we have unconscious biases. We see certain countries in certain ways. We see certain communities certain ways. We get to decide in our minds, you know, who are the more innovative type or who are the more bolder entrepreneurs versus less so, which are the kind of cities or communities that you would want to interview first. But as you write the book, you actually find out that there are a lot of hidden connections. There are a lot of new ideas literally in the making in front of us that are, I don't want to say not in the public domain, but they get drowned by this kind of common narrative, which your book in many ways fights against. Your book kind of tries to almost quieten this incessant noise all around us, to listen for something that's fresh, to listen for something that's new, to listen for something that the reader, I think in some respect, may already know or is picked up on or is just becoming curious about or is just noticed, is just kind of coming to the surface, and you coming with that fresh thought, with that fresh idea, with a structure that helps people to make sense of these disparate kind of points of information, and suddenly this broad noise around a topic kind of quietens down. And that for me is where books become very enticing, where you start, you can't put the book down, because that the alternative to reading would be to put the book down and to listen to the general noise, right? Whether you watch the news, whether you read the general magazines about the topic, whether you go onto YouTube and you listen to those who have a million followers or more, et cetera, et cetera. And suddenly you choose consciously to keep the book in your hands. You choose consciously to go deeper with someone who has done the work, who has gone deeper, who's listened attentively and is giving voice and shedding light onto aspects of a topic that make you more curious, that want you to go and find the value and the utility for yourself and for your organization and for your community. And that for me is where the magic happens in book writing. It's not in the kind of amplifying the general noise. It's in finding that fresh voice that people don't give attention to, but they know that it's there. And all you're really doing is you just kind of fine tuning the kind of the frequency into a voice that they suddenly go, there's something different here. Let me read one more page. And I'm very conscious that as you write, you're always one page away from the person closing the book and saying, okay, I've had enough. I can't read this anymore. I've gotten what I need you from here. Not going to give this guy 5 out of 5, you know, on Amazon.com, whatever the response is. And that for me is absolutely fascinating. You're always that one page away from closing. And the more you write and the more you find these fascinating connections, the more people, I guess, almost in a way, you know, want to listen more, want to engage with you, you know, want to then put the book down and have a conversation with you or join your community or post a book review, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just one of the fascinating things that I've certainly, as I started writing, that I came across.
I have a question for, well, I've got a couple of questions for you, Sarah, but the first one is, obviously, this podcast interview goes out around about the same time as you've chosen your books, your favourite books for 2022. Based on what you've just said, why did you choose the books that resonated with you this year? What was it about them that made you go, I need to recommend these? These are my favourite books.
Yes. So, you know, it's interesting. Every year around October, perhaps early November, we get together as a team and we start looking at the kind of books we'd want to recommend to our clients, to business partners, to our own team members. And everyone kind of contributes and they come up with a list. And it's generally way more than 10. And it's rich and it's diverse and it's sometimes conflicting and there's almost no boundary to it. And then we have to start asking the question about, what is it that the book made you feel? What is it that the book made you realize? What is it the book made you want to do that wasn't there before? And the only, I guess, firm requirement is that the book had to be written in the year in which we published. So all the books on our top 10 list are books that were actually published in 2022. I mean, there were amazing books that were published in 2021 or 2020, or even sometimes I think the oldest book we found on this year's list was actually 2016. It's a fascinating book. I really wanted to put it on the list, but the principle was only put on the list books that were actually published this year. But when you ask that question, what you find are very often not necessarily the most popular book. Yes, some are. I mean, Deep Purpose, for example, was a book that is widely known and written by a very well-known author out of the Harvard Business School and someone who's very much in the public domain, kind of an author superstar. But generally, the books and the authors on our list are not those superstars, are not the ones who would necessarily make it into the Financial Times, you know, top 10 list or the MIT book list, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that we necessarily or consciously want to go against the grain. We just ask ourselves, what would make you think or do something different? What moved you? And that's where you get a very different answer. And then the hard part is trying to trim down the list to 10.
Of course. I can imagine.
It's not always possible. Sometimes in some years we've had, we've been doing it now for 3 years. I remember, I think it was last year, we came up with kind of bonus selection because we just couldn't agree that it's going to be down to 10. This year, luckily, we managed to, but yeah.
But it's really great that these books have inspired you, because it's very easy. You know, I find sometimes I pick up a book and it doesn't inspire me. But actually, when you have a book that does inspire you, that prompts you to take action, that prompts you to think differently, do things differently, that's a really good book. And the problem is, I think, with a lot of, going back to the whole sort of publishing thing, is that when you've got a lot of money behind a book, obviously it can become a number one bestseller, etc. But actually, for a lot of people, they're working with a small publisher, or they're publishing it themselves. So, you know, they have to do even more to actually get their book out there and get noticed. But I'm glad that these books have come into your realm of consciousness, you and your team, so you can actually recommend them and share them more widely.
Well, you know, maybe just two aspects to add to it. I mean, the one is, we work on the assumption that often proves true, that you don't have to be a seasoned author to write a great book. I mean, for example, this year, one of the books in our selection is by Amy Clark, who wrote Growth Point. It's a fascinating book about leadership. It is her first book, and it's a book that fascinated us as much as, you know, authors have written about leadership and very similar topics for years on end. So it's not necessarily the number of books you've written, or the years that you have under your belt as an author, a recognized author, a published author. It's sometimes just the freshness. And I think Amy brought freshness into a topic that's been spoken about a lot, which is about that point when you recognize that you are developing as a human being, let alone as a leader. So I imagine it can't be easy to write a topic that's so well trodden, you know, a book about a topic that's been so much written about. And still she found something that's fresh about it, and something that we as a team found very actionable. When we started having discussions about what is our growth point, what is the point as a team you recognize that you are growing, and that you found that gap, that stretch that you can step into. I find that new authors are as good, if not sometimes fresher in their thinking, as some of the well-known authors. So they certainly make the list. And then the second one for me that comes up very often is, and this, I guess, relates very much to the work we do around business ecosystems, is you've got to go to the edge of an ecosystem. You've got to go to an edge of a network or an organization, whatever system you are trying to work within or change, in fact, to really witness the change. So we try to find books that place themselves right at the edge, that look at a topic from a different perspective, and sometimes right from the outside. For example, one of the books on our list, Decisions Over Decimals. It's a fascinating book by three authors, all very different from one another. And it would have been so easy to write that book, which is very much about decision-making, leadership decision-making. It would have been so much easier to write this from a data scientist point of view and talk about big data and talk about, you know, the many benefits of having data right at your disposal and the many tools that are available to you to make even better choices around it. But they took a very different view, and they spoke about intuition. They spoke about the role of intuition to choose data wisely, to use data wisely. And it's something, funnily enough, that actually one of our clients brought to my attention a couple of months back about the challenge, in fact, of being swamped with data. The challenge of, as much as data is superbly available and good quality data, they're in the asset management industry where the quality of information is very important. And what they find is, in fact, you've got to step back and sometimes recognize that you've steeped yourself too much in the data, and you've lost meaning. You lost your sense of intuition that provides the context, that provides you with the ability to ask the right questions, for which, yes, go ahead and you know, find the data. So for me, it's finding the authors that look at a topic from a new angle, from a different perspective, and ask, how does the system look like from here? Why does it look so differently to how others describe it? And when you do that, you find the way even they describe their own organization is very different. Maybe just as one more example, just to share with you, one of the individuals that I love following and listening to and an entrepreneur that I find absolutely fascinating is the CEO of AirAsia. I mean, AirAsia is a fascinating airline in its own right. And being in an airline business, I guess to manage can't be easy, let alone the last few years and the tumultuous changes that we've had. But even for the past 20 years, it's a razor thin market. And he wrote a fascinating post, I guess, about 2023. And the way he wrote it, if you didn't know who this person was, if you didn't know he was in airlines, you wouldn't have guessed it. It was all about crossing industry boundaries. It was all about what they will do in their payment space, or what they will do in terms of new ventures. And only right at the end of the last sentence, he talks about AirAsia, or he talks about aviation. And one could say, well, the person perhaps is bold or very confident of their ability to be as good in those areas as they are clearly have been in aviation. But I think he's talking more about the fact that industries have diffused and the fact that we can't easily find those boundaries anymore. In some cases, they don't exist anymore. And finding the uniqueness about your organization or about the topic that you're writing about, if you're an author, is all about being on the outside looking in or taking a vantage point deliberately that's very different to how your organization looks at the topic or your board looks at the topic or your shareholders look at the topic and say, what if we look at the organization and the way we create value from here? What would we see? Perhaps we wouldn't see an airline. We'll see something very different. And for me, that was such a great example of it. So,
well, I think for an author, you know, if you are working with a subject that has been done so much before, and I do have people come to me going, well, there's so much that's been out there, or they do their research and they find the book that they want to write that's already been written. The thing is, it's always about finding that unique hook or angle, it's that uniqueness of whether it's outside looking in or whether it's, you know, maybe the intuition in decision making. Because if another book about decision making would be actually when you do something really different that kind of gets you to think differently, that's when the magic happens. In terms of a book. And that's why, you know, increasingly I said that idea, the idea that everything hangs off, is just incredibly important, because then it links into everything. And that idea can morph. So people grow as they write their book. They develop, and they, because of the depth of knowledge, they grow, they develop, and they change as human beings because of the fact they've written their book. I've seen that quite a lot with many of my clients as well, because they have that certainty that what they know has value. Especially, I've had a couple of clients this week send their book out for peer review. The first time you get feedback from someone who's not your coach, your mentor, your friend, your partner, wow, you know, I've had grown men in tears because of that, because of the fact it's so humbling. When you do get feedback from people, when they say, you know, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess for our audience, this is the mentoring moment. This is when Karen is mentoring me on what's coming a few months down the line.
Of course. But it'd be good to hear about your story and your journey, Sarah, because I know that you're a few months into your book. You've started writing. You've got a really good plan. You know, you're very focused with it. What are you learning about the process of writing, being relatively early, but a fair way into the journey?
I guess a couple of things. The first one is write about what you're passionate about. Write about what perhaps you've been for years passionate about, and you just didn't give yourself permission to go and write a book about. Maybe you wrote a blog about it, or you got interviewed about it, or you do a lot of client work around it, and kind of in a one-on-one setting, getting a compliment about your work is one thing. But when you actually make the conscious decision of writing a book, I've certainly learned, and I would urge all individuals who are thinking about writing a book, or perhaps even in the midst of writing one, is to really connect with their passion, connect with the why, connect with the one thing that's really special about you and your work, and the people around you, the people who partner with you. And I'll come back to the partnering point in a moment, but the people who are there to help make this work really special. I often find you can draw that way back into the past. One of the exercises we often do with organizations is we don't just talk about a future narrative, we talk about a past narrative. What got you here? And we very often find, and I've done exactly the same with writing the book, is you find a much richer and multiple paths in terms of where today is. In fact, there are multiple todays. It's not just we're here and therefore we're writing the book from this point. You could write your book from 5, 6, 7 vantage points you've all arrived already at. And as a result, you're probably much more prepared for writing the book than you realize. Because you might just be thinking about one vantage point and saying, oh my God, Karen just reminded me, I don't have these three things. Actually, what I did find is when you look at it kind of at a historical perspective, you allow yourself to look back, sometimes even walk back as to where that passion actually started. And why is that topic something that you've been thinking about, working on, or delivering in for years, in fact, is so important for others, for the audience? That's kind of that's the one thing, connect with your passion. The second thing that I've learned is to become a great listener, because the book ultimately, as much as it reflects your passion, is not about you, it's about your audience. And it's finding that connection between their world, their context, their ecosystem, which is very often changing, which is very often being challenged and stretches and finding itself a new ground that's unfamiliar, and your passion. And in doing that, what I find, and what I find almost, I guess in many respects, most rewarding about the act of writing is the act of sharing that writing as I'm writing with people who are likely to read the book. Because I learn about their context in doing that. I learn about not just about their contribution to the book, which is substantive, as we spoke about earlier in today's conversation, but it's in fact, it gives us a window into their world. You know, it reminds me when I was a student doing my first degree many, many years back, I remember our lecturer coming in and showing us, this was, I think, a lecture about marketing research. And he waved this small kind of pocket-sized book to us, written by a guy named Mark Payne. And he says, you got to read about Mark's work, because I didn't know at that time, Mark Payne was one of the founders of Fahrenheit 212 and, you know, an organization we admire and has done incredible work around the world. He's still an absolute thought leader in understanding customers and understanding their needs and in their world. And he said, you got to read this book, because Mark was writing about the privilege of asking people questions, the privilege of being allowed into their world, the privilege of being shown their perspective. And that, whether you are officially a marketing researcher or whether you are writing a book and you're doing your study as your research as part of being an author, or whether you do your day-to-day work, your professional work, that's really a privilege. And I find that to be one of the main reason and one of the most fortuitous ways in which book writing is so rewarding, is because you get to be let in. The examples are their examples. The way they complete your sentences, you know, that's their contribution. The way they show you into areas that you didn't know about is theirs. So for me, there's something really, really special about that. And I guess the last thing that I've learned is book writing, in fact, very different to that traditional kind of Victorian English kind of a view of writing and ethic, I guess, is it makes you practice flexibility. You start writing about a topic and then you actually find out there's a deeper layer to it. And one of the chapters in my book, for example, speaks about the ecosystem around digital currencies. And it's a fascinating topic, from what China is doing to the US to the European Union. And they're all very different attempts at or experiments with digital currencies. But when I started writing, I was very much focused on the UAE and their example. And one of the people that I interviewed gave me a wealth of information. He actually lives in the UAE and he's involved in the project, which is a collaboration between private and public sector. And he says, I'm going to hook you up with someone who has even more experience than me in this. And she lives in Singapore, and you've got to interview her about the Singapore experience. And I actually found out that from a very specific, clear focus about what I'm going to be writing about digital currencies and the ecosystem that it requires, I've been delving into the Singapore experience now for the past 3 weeks. My family will even tell you that it's kind of come at a little bit of a cost on our holiday, if they're kind of every morning on my phone writing notes. But it's been absolutely fascinating about how that experience, which in fact is not even specific to Singapore, it's an experiment or a set of experiments being done by a collaboration between Singapore, Australia, Malaysia, and South Africa, which I didn't know about, is changing, you know, the world of central bank issued digital currencies. And for me, the ability to be flexible, the ability to change your perspective around the topic as you're writing, as you're bringing new voices to the table, is so important. It's not that one view is right and the other one is wrong, but you're going deeper and you're finding new insights, which require you and requires the ecosystem that's being built to be more flexible. And that's really what I'm seeing in the world of digital currencies, and that's what I'm seeing in other examples that I write about in the book.
Well, what I find with many authors, and I think you're going through this as well, Sarah, is that there's a richness that comes from doing the research and also from exploring the ideas that you want to put in the book. So you've got a central idea that everything hangs off, but then you've got multiple ideas and multiple angles in which that can go because of the research, and you can obviously change your perspective and change the route of your book. But then there's a richness when you actually, through writing the book, there's more that goes into your business. There's more that goes into your conversations with other people. There's more that will go into the book. And that's the magic that happens. There's so many unexpected benefits that I find authors go through when they're writing books. But that's one of them, when you kind of, you recognize what you know already, but you also, you go deeper. You know, even if you think you've got a process and you know what you do it really well, actually you can do it even better, or you know more, and it's the richness that happens.
Yeah. Karen, I want to ask you a question about your program, because obviously being part of it, I kind of experienced it firsthand. But one of the things that, or I guess the two points in the journey of book writing that's been fascinating me is the first one is the upfront part, which is the giving structure, a frame, you know, to a loose idea that I guess lots of authors come to you with and saying, I want to write a book about this. And it's kind of, it does require some refinement, some polishing, to the point where you kind of, you now have a system to actually go and write. You remember one of the first conversations we had is don't use the first month to actually write. There's other work that's required. And I guess the second part of the book writing journey that I'm still heading towards is that point where you think you've finished writing, you think you have a manuscript. Just talk to us a little bit about each of these two transitions.
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, because it's kind of 10 principles. I broke it down into sort of 10 main principles or 10 main sort of, you know, junctures. But it is really planning and writing. Too many people go into the writing stage without actually adequately planning it out. And for me, the planning is so important. And actually, you could probably half your writing time if you actually had a really good plan, because you could write about the wrong subject and you could write, I've had people come to me with like 30,000-40,000 words that doesn't fit in with the idea. So actually really being able to taking the time to explore that idea, to be able to create a structure for your book. So when you sit down to write, you know what's going in each chapter. And obviously, you know, different people, some people like more structure than others. There are two types of people. There are pantsers and there are planners. So the pantsers like to fly by the seat of their pants. They just want to get on with it. And the planners do plan. And I encourage everyone to be a planner, but not to plan so much that they never get their writing done, because that's another downside. Because you could plan and you can prepare and you could actually, you know, create the structure, but you never actually do the writing. So the planning's important. But yeah, when you get to the writing stage, it's, you have to be flexible, as you just said, Sarah, in terms of, you know, the plan you might have had for the chapters might evolve. You suddenly might realise you've got an extra couple of chapters, or you've not got much to say about something you thought you might have something to say about. You might want to invite other people in to collaborate with you, other experts or other people to interview or to write parts for you. If you feel that you don't have enough knowledge to write on a particular area, and you've got someone else who's willing to work with you on that in a way that people are going to understand and people are going to be able to read it. So it's thinking about that side of things. So you've kind of got the planning side, which is important, but also the writing and how, you know, how the book develops and how you get to that endpoint of creating something that's readable, that's engaging and that's exciting. I've been working with a client this week who just sent her book out for peer review. And one of the things that she had is that she wrote a book over a period of time. And she found that when she went back to look at the first part of the book, her voice had developed, it had grown. So there was a fair amount of editing. So she just added more of her personality into that, just to make it as, you know, as good as it could be in terms of, you know, bringing her personality into the book.
Perhaps a question about So now you've gone through the journey, you've got the manuscript, you've received feedback, you've been kind of refining it a few times, and now it's ready for publishing. Perhaps our audiences, talk to us a little bit about what happens on the other side. What happens when you get to that point where you actually have a book? What are some of the things that you've seen authors do once they get to that stage? Whether the book is already kind of fully published and they've got the copy in their hand, or whether they can kind of see that finish line in sight. Well, what are the kind of things that become possible when they get to that point?
Well, in terms of actually having your book in your hand, so much is possible. You know, leading up to that publication, in terms of one of the interviews that I'm doing with the Smart Author interviews or lives that I do for the community and for yourself, is I'm doing an interview around crowdfunding in January, which is really exciting. Someone who was a Smart Author Fast Track client earlier last year, and she published her book. So really dynamic crowdfunding campaign. Obviously, things like that are really useful. But I think it's always thinking about beyond the book. How can you actually maximize your reach? So in terms of, can you get in front of other people's audiences and add value to podcast interviews, to maybe TV interviews or radio interviews, or, you know, and it's utilizing your own network to add value to them, but also to educate and you know, inspire other people. So there's all sorts of things around, you know, getting your message out wider by using the contacts you have, but the contacts that they can, obviously, like you're doing, that they can help you to get further. But it's always thinking about beyond the book. You know, are there opportunities for maybe an organization to buy bulk copies of your book? So you're not looking at the individual sales, but you're looking at kind of the wider thing. Speaking engagements obviously is a perfect thing to do. And again, you know, if the organizer is willing to buy 50, 100 copies of the book, you know, for their team, brilliant as well. So it's always thinking about those opportunities, the wider opportunities. There's the Business Book Awards, which runs in the UK every year. And there's all sorts of different options there in terms of, there is an international selection for 2023 SAR. That's something to bear in mind. So it's just thinking about the options beyond, you're not, if you can open your mind to options beyond individual book sales. Obviously, individual book sales, you know, someone going onto Amazon, onto, you know, your local bookstore, actually being able to get a copy of the book is important. But actually, what's the wider impact you can make? If you've got an important message to share, you've got something that's worth talking about, it's like, how do you get it out to more people? And that's really about having a marketing plan, not just when you launch it, but when you start writing it. So having, you know, talking to people on LinkedIn, having conversations in networking meetings, mention it to, and I'm mentioning it in all sorts of, I had a client recently who's mentioned it to somebody in a bar, and then they've got contact off the back of that. So you never know where the opportunities might come from. They might come in from unexpected places.
Perhaps a last point, I guess, a comment and a question. One of the things that fascinated me about book writing and generally sharing ideas more broadly is it's a bit of a great equalizer, isn't it? Because you can both reach people from around the world. And in fact, we see authors from around the world writing with a global audience in mind. But it's also one where age doesn't seem to play a role. I've seen book authors in their 70s and 80s writing and publishing their books, and I've seen those in their 20s. So it's one of these activities where if you have an idea to share, if you have something that you believe is of significance or value, of interest to others, it's the best time to go and write. The technology is there, the mentoring and book writing programs are there, you know, the support structures are very often there. They're literally just one click away. There's nothing really stopping us from, you know, sharing our great ideas with the world and allowing others, in fact, throughout today's conversation to collaborate with us.
Yeah, I think it's really important that, yeah, as you say, anyone can do it at any age, but you don't have to do it alone. I think that's, you know, if people take nothing, and there's so many gems and diamonds that have come out of today's conversations, are, but actually you're not alone when you're doing it. You don't have to do it alone. There's so many people like me who can support you, and people that can support you at all stages, you know, whether you need someone to support you and just do the cooking for you, or whether you want someone to support you as a sounding board, or you want a mentor who's going to sort of support you through the whole process and give you access to the connections you need to make the book happen. You know, there is so much support out there, and it's just making sure that you realize that you are not alone. You know, there, no man is an island, I think is the phrase. So it's just like, who can support you to actually step up and, you know, into what you really want to share, your thought leadership, your expertise, your knowledge, and help you to make that idea happen. But it's, yeah, the team, having the right, actually, dare I say, ecosystem in place is important.
Karen, really, thank you for today's conversations. And, you know, as we get to the top of the hour, it's been wonderful having you on our podcast and sharing your wisdom and your experience in this growing area. Really, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.